Welcome back to the Perth Business Podcast. On this episode, I chat to Amy from Lumos Marketing. This is one of the first marketers we've had on who's an author. She's born in Perth and passionate about helping small businesses with small budgets. So we did our best to capture the best case studies from Amy's clients, from gardeners to accountants and everything in between, stories that helped her identify key challenges for small businesses and allow her to put the solutions in her book in simple layman's terms. Give it a listen and let us know what you think.
I'm having
what's
ramen
your
tonight.
What's your favourite ramen place in Perth?
I like the one in Vic Park.
Oh,
the
yeah.
red one.
Hakata Gensuke.
Yeah. I'm obsessed with that place.
Yes.
And there's a couple in the city.
Have you tried the one near Melbourne Hotel?
Yes.
That's my favourite in Perth.
I love
that. Yeah. Little free eggs. I'm like, I go crazy and I'm like, why am I so full?
My husband does that too. Like, why do you need them? We've got heaps of eggs at home.
Yeah. Wait,
they just give you free boiled eggs.
Free things taste better.
That's what I'm saying. It's like why they're here.
And then you have them with the Japanese mayo and the kiwi mayo. Yeah. And it's just like, it tastes way better. I try and make it at home. I'm like, this is crap.
Yeah. What did they do to those eggs?
I usually ask you about your coffee choices. So you guys don't have anything too wild and crazy. Although normal milk, I don't think I've ordered that in a while.
I'm not fussy. Like whatever milk is fine. Yeah. I just like it cold, even in winter.
Yeah.
Ah, I've got a friend who can't have any hot drinks at all. It's very strange.
I'm not that bad, I think.
You're like, if someone gets me a coffee, I'll drink it.
Yeah. You know how like you just want ice cream in winter? I'm like kind of like translates to my coffee order as well.
Yeah. Oh, I like that. And you, the almond cap?
Nowadays everyone has really nice almond milk. I feel like we went through that hit and miss phase and now it's amazing. But over in New Zealand and whenever I've travelled, no one has almond milk over there.
Yeah.
Like it surely must be really Australian.
Yeah, do they drink just dairy?
I don't know.
They're like sheep milk.
Yeah. Probably.
It's wild.
Yeah. I don't know. But it's delicious.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. Yum.
You don't have a coffee, Hannah?
I had one just before I got here. Okay. So I was like, I'm already kind of buzzing. So I knew I needed to settle down.
Yeah.
I might crash. We'll see.
There's water outside. You can go cool, pat yourself down. awesome. So I guess we heard about you because you reached out to us, and that's really cool. I love that. I'm so excited that you did reach out. Where are you guys from? Are you from Perth, Amy? Are you originally a Perth gal?
Yep. There's nothing at all exciting about my time in Perth. I mean, I grew up south of the river and now live north of the river. So
that's pretty wild. Spicy. Yeah.
my family actually owns they're a publicly listed company now, but they were a small business and they've been around for over 53 years in Perth.
Wow.
So they really have their origins in Perth. And so we've always kind of grown up in part of the Perth business kind of scene. Yeah. And, I mean, even then our family used to run the racetrack down in Kwinana, the motorplex.
So
we had that as well. And we were always just part of this Perth business community.
Yeah.
Which has been kind of cool. And my husband, my now husband and I grew up on the same street. Like we have this very suburban Perth boring, like life.
Boring?
Yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't say boring, but like that's pretty unique.
Well, it's quite cute actually, but I wouldn't live anywhere else. My sister lives in Melbourne. I don't know why.
They always come back though. I tell you what. They do. It's a very Perth thing to move to Melbourne. I've noticed.
Yes,
but everyone comes back.
I have noticed that actually.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's So I very, very much love everything about Perth and it's just amazing to see how much it's grown over the last kind of 5 or 10 years even. Yeah. Especially like in our space, in the small business space, that's just quite special.
Definitely.
Yeah. That's me. Adriana?
Oh, I'm from Mongolia. And then really random.
That's cool.
I moved to Australia 10 years ago.
You're like pre-COVID, add two.
Yeah. So before I was I was born there and then I moved to Nigeria and then I moved to Azerbaijan. And then when I hit like high school age, then I came to Australia.
Oh, my goodness. What brought you here?
Just my dad's job. So everyone in Mongolia, you're either in like retail or you're in the mining industry. So they just,
that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. What a story.
Yeah, right?
Did you know that?
I actually did. But when you said Azerbaijan, I was like, I've never heard you say that word before.
I always say Russia because most people don't know where Azerbaijan is, but it used to be part of Russia and then they became like independent. So yeah, it's very like an obscure small country. Yeah, it's smaller than Perth, like the entire country.
Yeah, wow. That's wicked.
Whoa, actually, that's very small.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. I feel like in my little family history, I'm like this close to clicking on one of those stupid DNA ads because
they're so expensive. Yeah. They're like, I was looking at it and they're like 150, like a
minimum.
Standard
price. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Because my great grandmother did a little trip somewhere. She took a little excursion somewhere over in Eastern Europe. And like Mongolia has been brought up in my family, like discussions, a bit of Russia. And everyone always says, like, I look very Filipino, like a little bit in the background there. And I'm like, I don't see it, but all right. Although I feel like we're going to start meshing into like the same looking person in the next like millennia. Yeah, mm-hmm. For sure. Okay, enough about me. Stop talking about family history. That's really cool. It's cool to hear that you've got a mix of like different cultures in your business already.
Yeah, we do actually.
Like there's 6 of us in our team at the moment and everyone's kind of got their own unique history and their families have all worked in different businesses and they've been exposed to heaps of different kinds of cultures and it's actually quite nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Oh, that's awesome. So tell us about your business.
Yeah. So we have a small marketing practice. Mm-hmm. We only work with small business.
Yeah.
And it started about 6-7 years ago. When I graduated from uni, I pretty much didn't work for anyone at all. I just started working as a consultant.
Wow.
Yeah, okay. Which is wild. And I wish that I didn't do that in retrospect. But I mean, it's actually quite lucky. We work with so many amazing businesses that have kind of mentored all of us over the last, 3-4 years. So we have been able to, like, we kind of inject ourselves into their businesses a lot. And that's been quite special. But at the start, I started working as a web developer. And at uni, I didn't really do marketing or anything like that at all. It was just fortuitous that I got these opportunities when I graduated and I just did it, I guess, as a freelancer and kind of built it up from there. And so it started in like web development and I did programming as well. And then I became obsessed with content marketing and social media marketing. Yeah. And then I guess over the last 5 years, we've just built the team up and now I just became obsessed with small business.
Yeah.
And we started developing a framework for small business. Small businesses. It's more like a systems thinking kind of framework.
Mm-hmm.
I had this real problem where small businesses had such a small marketing budget. Like, I think it's like 60% of SMEs in Australia turn over less than $250,000 a year,
mm-hmm.
or $300,000 a year, or something. And because we only spend about 3-5% of our revenue on marketing, 60% of SMEs have a budget of less than $8,000 a year for marketing.
Wow. Yeah.
And if you think about most agencies out there, what could you do with $8,000? Almost
that's like,
nothing.
That's the consultation fee, like the initial consult.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Crazy. And so in reality, like you have these businesses and you think about the failure rates of small business and it's just over 50%. Like it's just insane. And it's because good marketing services are so inaccessible. And there's these amazing marketing frameworks out there like we have these conversations all the time. Like there's theories like the 4 P's and the attract and nurture and something. And then there's the funnel marketing. There's all this stuff, right? And it's amazing. But then you talk to like a gardener who's a technician and he's a technician and he's created his own business based on the fact he's just exceptional at what he does.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's moved into this, we call, you know, that progression from the technician to kind of that visionary. And he's kind of owns his own business, but he doesn't know what any of that stuff means.
Mm.
And because he doesn't have this budget for marketing, he just doesn't know what to do and where to spend the budget. And it's just this problem I've been seeing for years where everyone I meet has been burnt by someone in marketing. And it's not because the marketing company is trying to take advantage of them. It's just because they can't offer their best services to them for a price that they can afford. And it's hard because they don't understand what the marketing company is even doing because they're a gardener. Like they don't understand what the list means.
They're like, oh, just give it to you, but then they don't really know what they're giving or what's happening behind the scenes.
And because most small business owners know so much about their craft, it's so hard for someone else to take the marketing on and actually do it justice sometimes. So you almost have to have this symbiotic relationship between an SME owner and a marketing professional. Same way you would with like an accounting professional. Mm-hmm. Like you're not going to do all your own accounting stuff because it's quite specific. But
exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. But because marketing is so accessible now, like you can build your own website, you can do your own Facebook ads and you can do your social marketing. Like a lot of businesses will try and do it themselves and they won't have the success. And 17% of businesses reckon that marketing is the reason their business has failed. So they do a lot of surveys with businesses that have closed up and that's the set the top the like the first reason I think is to do with cash flow, and that's the second reason is a lack of marketing.
Yeah.
And it's so hard because it's so hard, and to meet, and you guys meet them as well, like to meet businesses that have these amazing stories and they come from this place of passion and they want to help people and they want to
so personal.
Oh, it's amazing. Yeah. And then for them to not be able to achieve their dream or to reach their goals because this marketing is inaccessible to them, it's just so hard to see. And I mean, even for us, like I would, and we do now, we do everything we can, and we don't charge a lot of money, and we try and make sure that we can help in some way. And it's just my favorite thing to do is to be able to offer something that helps someone get tiny bit closer to where they want to get. And and what we tried to do was to design something that they could use that wasn't like a theory or a framework or whatever, but it kind of linked that to actual actions that they can take.
Yeah, okay.
I sat in this workshop a couple of weeks ago, and a client had invited me to be part of this workshop that was getting facilitated by someone else that had to do with an export marketing strategy. And we talked about marketing and he brought up the four P's.
Yeah.
And we went through it all and it was great.
Yeah.
And then she just turns to me and she's like, so what do I do now? And it's so hard, this difference between like theory and action.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I wanted to create something that I knew worked, that was simple, that I could kind of teach people where they could understand it, like a gardener could understand it, but not necessarily understanding in a way they could control it. So they could use something and go, I think what I need to do is invest in attracting strangers, and I'm going to try and use Google Ads. And then they can have that conversation with an ads company and say, this is my budget, this is what I'm trying to do, this is what I'm trying to achieve. And they can then keep an eye on it and understand how it's impacting their business. So it's almost just empowering them with a bit more knowledge.
Yeah.
And then we designed a framework for it. We spent 2 years testing it. Mm-hmm. We call it the Caterpillar Framework. It's a systems thinking model for marketing. So there's a lot of info about it, but it's actually quite nice. And we developed the framework. I published a book about it a couple years ago. And it's amazing to see it come to life and to be able to get people's feedback on it. And then we've spent the last 2 years since it was published. It was published mid-2020. That was a great time. but we published it and it's just been amazing to get feedback from that and actually keep refining what it looks like. And then that's what we do, is we develop that framework and we deliver it in a consulting capacity. And then if someone needs help with the work, then we do our best to help them. So there aren't a lot of companies that provide marketing services exclusively for small business. Mm-hmm. It's not because they can't help small business. It's genuinely because they small businesses can't afford. And so for us, we've made a pretty big commitment to trying to figure out how we can create affordability in our service offering. And we're just so – I cannot be prouder of my team and the way that they they come together. It's true.
Is that me? Yeah.
But it's just amazing, like just the amount of times we go just above and beyond, and just to watch how passionate we get about other people's brands. Yeah. And it's just amazing. We get invited to like every Christmas party.
Year. How good. Like,
it's good just,
indication. Yeah,
okay, yeah.
That's what I think.
It's all worth it.
I love that.
Yeah. So yeah, that's pretty much our business in a nutshell. And it's been an absolutely amazing journey. And you know, some days, like any business. Some days are hard. Yep. And I had a baby last year. So
just to add to that.
So we had a, you know, that was a nice challenge. And I think a lot of female business owners, I just don't think we give them enough credit because it is, honestly, it's just an amazing journey that comes with so many more challenges, I think. But it puts everything into a nice perspective and it just shows you got to have, you know, a really great team around you and you've got to have a really great purpose and mission. And
Awesome. Yeah. I think one of the big questions we always ask business owners is what motivates you, but you've captured it. I feel like you've got it. Like,
You guys would have it too. Like when you meet someone and they're like, I'm really passionate about this, so I've spent all of my time developing this. It's infectious. You're kind of like, I want to do everything
exactly
I can.
Yeah.
I will work nights. And we do. We just do it. Like the amount of time we don't bill, like our accountant just hates us. Like it's just crazy. But we
That's awesome. Lovely. I love that because I feel like you made a really good point on the whole theory versus implementation side of things. And on one side of things, for bigger agencies, they have to be very accountable for their time and maybe their staff cannot take the time to do overtime for unbillable hours, that sort of thing. And that makes sense in some capacity. But I agree with you in terms of being able to like have that person who's on the other side of the table with that passion, have them be able to be really vulnerable and say like, I love all these ideas and my end goal is to have not just a website but like a YouTube channel and I want to travel and do this and like that sort of thing and be able to say, cool, what can we do right now for the budget that you've got at the moment? A big question I always got when I was in the account management team at my last agency job was what percentage of my income should I or my what percentage should I put towards marketing? And it's not a flat answer for any business. I think everyone who had that idea were your gardeners, your like those people who are like, well, there must be a magic number and if I can work my business around that for marketing, and then when it doesn't work they can be like, well, marketing ruined my business, like it did not work, it sucked me dry, cash flow.
Easy
is
way
like,
to put the blame.
Hard. Yeah. And it's hard because it is a risk. Like, what are they say like 50% of marketing works. But I don't want to bore you with all the details of the framework and what we do with it. But we have
Isn't that why we're here?
Coming to talk about you.
I'm just absolutely obsessed with the framework and how it works. But the premise is and just kind of bear with me for a bit, is if you've got so every customer goes through this linear journey from when they're a stranger. So they don't know anything about your business. They're a stranger. Mm-hmm. All the way through to when they're like your biggest fan, right? Mm-hmm. And that journey is linear. Yeah. So at one point, they're going to change their mind. They're going to leave.
Yeah.
So we went to find – well, we figured out what the major touch points are and we boil it down to just five touch points, and it just goes from a stranger to like a visitor to a lead to a customer to a fan.
Yeah.
And if you measure it, you can benchmark conversion rates between stages against your industry, against your history – and all you need to do is fix the one that's the problem and you just start there. So if you've only got an $8,000 budget annually, then if you put most of that budget towards fixing the problem, then the bottleneck, then
– yeah.
So we worked with a client that that had an estimating team, so they would get inquiries in and they were a quoting team. So they're an engineering company and they would provide estimates. But what was happening was they weren't really tracking the conversion rate. Every time they got an inquiry, they used Excel spreadsheets or they just used their inbox, and they had multiple people in the team. And even just by increasing the conversion rate from 5% to 10% or whatever, it just doubles their revenue. Like it's huge, it's things like that where they might come to me and say, I need more customers. That's what I need. I need to run. I'm thinking about Google ads. I'm not getting enough traffic. And then when you actually look at the whole system, you go, what about if we spend the money there on upskilling your, you know, your estimating team, or if we introduce a CRM or we do some work there, then when they do spend money at the front attracting strangers, at least you know it's going to have the best chance.
Down. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not a overly complex idea, but it's just connecting like theories like that to actions. So identifying where the bottleneck is and actually trying to improve it. So it's exactly to your point. Like, this is my budget. Where should I spend it to get the best results? And so it's trying to help them figure out what that looks like.
Yeah. Do you find channels like Google can misinform those small businesses, because I think like they obviously Google wants you to spend more. It's a given, it's a known, even your gardener will know that. They'll know, and they'll that's probably their biggest gripe is like, oh, every time I want to do something in my new CRM, like it keeps asking me to upgrade my plan and do this and that. And they're like, ugh, you know, hands up, can't do it. Like it's too expensive. They keep trying to get my money. So do you think some platforms are really not helping our small business community?
Yeah, I think it's hard because a lot of – when you don't know enough about it, it's easy to be kind of swayed or taken advantage of. And if you think about messages like that, it's coming in when they're up at night at 1 a.m. wondering how they're going to pay their staff. Or it's the phone calls you get from like those cold calls you get from agencies that are like, I can help you do this and double that. And you second guess everything you've ever done.
Yeah.
Imagine if you could take that kind of stress away from a small business so they could just focus on what they do best.
Exactly.
I mean, it's a nice goal to have, but that's definitely something that motivates us, is trying to figure out how to help businesses focus on what they're really, really good at. But still understand the stuff that they don't need to do day to day. Because, I mean, if they go, hey, Google Ads is what I need next, my whole system's working great, I just need more leads. How much more like confident would they be to make that call and upgrade that and do what they need to do and call that agency? Or it's just something I think is missing quite a lot.
Do you do like education pieces as well on the side, or do you just do sort of like personal face-to-face working with each and every?
Well, we well, so we published the book and we're going through a process of republishing that soon. So that's pretty exciting. Well, I've got this I'm obsessed with the Barefoot Investor. Who isn't obsessed with the Barefoot Investor?
I haven't read it yet, but
but if you think about what he's done, is he's made finance like really accessible to anyone. Yeah. And for me, I'm like, well, if I can make this marketing stuff really accessible, it's not stopping people going to a financial planner. The Barefoot Investor doesn't tell people not to go there because you need them at a certain point. I mean, but for me, I'd love to be that very first basic step. And actually the book at the moment, and I brought a copy with me so you can see, it's not a short book.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, that's like a, oh, that's no, like that's a novel.
Chunky. Yeah. I think it's like 70,000 words. It is not an easy read, unfortunately. But can you, like,
I mean, it's not that big. It's not like a dictionary. I mean, I feel
this
like
is the final copy. You should have seen the first copy. Oh,
We spoke to someone recently who said he was writing textbooks as part of Jack Anderson. He's great. I'm gonna upload his episode next. So listen out because he's really cool. But he was saying, he was like, we thought we'd just write a textbook, and like little did they know it would take like a year to get like a million chapters down to like this actual really digestible end format. I would pick that up.
There you go. You can pick this one up if you like. Yeah. But the version we're updating, it's actually pretty special, I think, because it's got that more that Barefoot Investor kind of vibe. So it'll have more diagrams and images, and it'll be quite lighthearted. But over the last 2.5 years, we've captured so many more examples of this in practice.
Exactly.
So many more stories, so many more consistencies with stuff we've talked about. There's some stuff in there that's just too complicated. Like it's going to be quite exciting. So we do that. And then at the moment we're kind of bridging that gap between reading the book and actually coming and working with us. So trying to develop ways of people consuming the information without having to do a one-on-one session if that's not in their budget right now.
That. That's really selfless.
It is almost.
Yeah, I feel like that's like a not-for-profit.
Yeah. I'd love to be not-for-profit, but again, our accountant, I don't think they know.
listening to this being like,
we need profit. We need.
Stop doing stuff for free. But it's quite special. Sometimes I feel like I sound really naive.
No, I don't think so.
But it's I mean, you guys would get it too. It's when you meet someone that's I mean, I hope Catherine's listening to this because she's pretty special. But there's this beautiful lady that's working with us, and she makes these keto biscuits, right? Okay, and she's a pharmacist. Cool. She's a pharmacist I suppose uses keto as a
As like a health benefit sort of thing.
She's on it. Oh, she's been keto before, and she recognized there's not enough snacks for keto people that use keto. Okay. Yep. So she's gone and like she's a pharmacist, and she's gone and she spent the last like 5 years developing these keto crackers that you can have with cheese and stuff.
Yeah.
And so she's she's baked them. She's done all this. She's got a distributor. She's stocked in IGA and all those places. She's stocked everywhere. Like, she's,
what's the brand?
It's called Keep Keto.
Okay.
Keep Keto. Just a little plug, yeah. but you listen to Catherine, who's working, like, she has a job as a pharmacist. She's got two teenagers. Yeah. She's spending all her time trying to develop new products. She's so passionate about what she does. And you just can't. It's just infectious. I love these crackers. I go and buy them now all the time from the shop. I'm not keto, but I love them because you just want to support people like that. Exactly. And she's just doing some really cool stuff. So, and she has the same problem, is she's got a very, very limited budget for marketing. Mm. And she's working through the nuances of how she can promote her product and get the best, I guess, ROI for any kind of marketing investment. And developing that kind of strategy with her and alongside her and then helping her bring it to life is exceptionally rewarding.
Awesome.
So go buy some crackers from Keep Keto.
Shameless plug. We'll put it in the footnotes.
That'd be great. Yeah.
Here's a list of 50 others I'd like you
to
send them through.
These are my clients.
We'll give you a shameless plug at the end of the book, so it stays in there. Yeah. I think you hit on a really cool topic there, and I want to hear from both of you on the concept of storytelling in your marketing and how important it is, because like you said, now you know Catherine, right? Mm. You buy her biscuits or crackers because you know how good they are, but also because you know her story. And like, if you pass them in the shelves, there's only so much that like engaging packaging can do for us. Like the Funk guys, for example, Funk Cider, we would talk, like I specifically reached out to them because I was like, I love their cans. I love the artwork. And then we went and heard their story and I was like, oh my God, they used to make juice. Like they're brothers. This is so cool. Tell us your story.
Are they the Juice Brothers?
So they started in that like respect, and now that I know their brand better, I'm like, oh, I wonder how they came up with that flat. Like you start in your head, you start building a relationship with this brand. Yeah. So what do you think is the importance of storytelling? Have you got any cool like examples? So the keto one's a great example. Have you got any examples of how small business owners can leverage that sort of storytelling in their marketing if they don't know where to start?
I don't think, and I don't know if you guys are the same, I don't think I've ever met a small business owner that doesn't have a story behind why they're doing what they're doing. Because it's the story, the story's the reason they get out of bed and they do it. And normally what we say is a small business owner will wake up as a technician and they'll either want to provide the market with something that's not there because they've seen an opportunity, or they'll want to do something better.
So
a lot of small business owners come from that industry already and they've got some kind of experience with poor product performance or customer experience, and or they come from they just always come from like a really nice genuine place. And I think sometimes if you think about the customer attention span, it's really quite short, but we all are committed to products where we understand the story more. So I guess when you've got platforms like social media, and Adriana's like a specialist in that, is when you've got the time to walk the walk, not just like have it on your About Us page, but if you've got the opportunity to use your social media and to tell that story over time and to inject I guess your why, like this is this Simon Sinek piece, it's the why into your content marketing piece, you've got time to build relationships around that. But yeah, it's definitely a challenge. I don't know, what do you think, Adriana?
I can't think of a specific example.
Maybe channels?
Yeah, but just in general, I think, like you said, like a story, that's how you connect with people and it gives like a face to them. The only thing I can think of is, you know, Canva. You probably do, because we're all
Canva. So I love Canva.
But just even like that small story of how she started it, where she just made it because her mum was like a primary school teacher and she just wanted to make like cool graphs and like pictures for like her kids, and she just decided to make Canva because, you know, like Photoshop and like would be too hard to use for,
and
like
expensive.
So just anything like that was really nice to support like a small business.
And social media is a really great channel for doing that.
And I think it's evolving, right? So do you use any specific channels, or do you see anything that you kind of have leveraged? So for example, a really good one that we need to jump on that I'm like too – I don't know, I feel like I need to invest more time into it. But that's the perfectionist in me, where I'm like, I need to do it right instead of just doing it. TikTok, and not just TikTok, but reels and short form video content. Do you guys have a channel or anything that you kind of you like to use?
I guess it depends on the client. Yes. 100%. Yep. So, and that their target market and where they're spending time. And what we find is a lot of our small business owners will carry a lot of biases with them about where they want to inject their brand because of either what they've experienced before as a business or what they consume personally. So if you're working with someone that whose target market is not exactly, you know, them and their close friends, then they would be resistant to using channels like TikTok, for example. I mean, we're working with a coffee company at the moment, and again, they make amazing coffee beans.
Brightside Coffee.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, like we don't need to be elusive here. You can plug away.
Brightside Coffee. Yeah. But Matt, he personally doesn't use a lot of the channels that he's exploring, but he's kind of, he's such a great ambassador for trying new things. Yeah. And, yeah. And yes, it is a risk. It always is a risk, but all because you don't know something intimately doesn't mean that you can't give it a go.
Yeah,
so, I mean,
exactly.
And that's why we're here to help. And that's why, I mean, marketing companies are around. And one of the things we talk about a lot with content marketing and our clients is understanding really clearly what you want to achieve by undertaking any kind of marketing activity. Mm-hmm. So if you're going about to communicate your story, and part of that is to build your customer base or your fan base.
Yeah.
Then at least when you sit down to do something, you kind of know really clearly, I'm going to spend this amount of time to try and get this many people to engage with me or to follow me or to do whatever. And I think sometimes that makes it a lot easier to give things a go. I know we digress a little bit, but
no.
There's this idea, this cognitive dissonance, where we like...
Okay. Yeah.
So it's like a human nature. It's like you do something and then you just can't change your mind because you said you were going to do it.
Yeah.
It's like why people follow, apparently, it's why people follow political parties that they no longer align with, like because they don't want to be seen as someone that changes their mind.
I know so, a few people who do kind of like that.
Yeah. Interesting.
It's really weird. But we all do
about to go
it.
Read into it.
But we all do it. Like, I mean, like same with the coffee, right?
Yeah. True. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. If you suddenly go, oh, not really into this, but you go, nope, that's me. I'm an almond cappuccino person. Like
I literally this morning was like, should I make it an oat cap? And then I was like, no, I don't have
exactly
like, caps on it. I was like, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm like, oh yeah, exactly. I can't have dairy, that's why. But like aside from that.
Yeah, but that's what people do. Like it's normal human nature, right? Yeah. So if you start something, and this is classic with marketing, if you start something and it's not achieving what you want, you're too scared to get rid of it because you feel like something bad's going to happen. But imagine if you spent like 6 hours a week on using LinkedIn, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of business owners do, and a lot of small business owners do, and it's a really amazing place to build relationships online.
LinkedIn, yeah. Yep.
But say that they were using it and their target demographic was actually consumers, and those consumers were now moving over to TikTok, right? Mm. The amount of effort it would take them to actually spend those 6 hours on learning how to use TikTok and deciding whether it's a good mechanism for them, no one will do it. Mm. Like it's very, very rare, I think, to meet someone that will explore different channels unless they feel personally comfortable with it.
Mm, interesting.
It's an interesting thing. So with TikTok for you, like absolutely give it a go because, I mean, you're never going to know perfectly how it's going to end up. But being able to figure out how you can connect with people in different ways is part of the learning process and it helps you reach your goals. So figuring out exactly what clients want to achieve, sometimes it's like pulling teeth. Mm. Like, so tell me exactly how many people you want to connect with you. How many, you know, how many of this do you want to sell? Like sometimes it's hard. I think a lot of people don't know those answers because they don't want to fail by putting a number down.
Yeah. Right?
But if you have a conversation with someone and they can give you a bit of a ballpark, at least you can use that as like a bit of a guidepost.
Yeah.
So, well, realistically, and this is one of the great things about our framework, is because it's linear, you can use it to scenario plan. So if you want six clients, your conversion rate's 5%, you're going to need this many people to inquire. Mm. And if you need this many people to inquire, your website conversion rate's this and you need this many website visitors. Yep. So how do we bring that many people to your website? So easy to actually set budgets based on results.
It's so practical, like what you've put down. Is that like, do people find that intimidating or do they seem to find it easier just to see a progression almost in front of them?
I don't know. I think the idea doesn't blow people's mind.
Mm.
And I think that's kind of funny because I almost seem like a big cop-out because like...
It's just a formula,
it's just,
right?
It's just a system.
Yeah. The formula. Yeah. And they're like, I can't do that because I've
got... Yeah, but my customers, sometimes they call me. They don't submit it on the website. I'm like, I really don't. It doesn't matter because that's always going to be consistent, right?
Yeah.
But the magic thing is that it's not always as like... it's not always as predictable. So yes, you could spend money at the start, but with marketing, it's not always perfect. But what about if you try and convert more people at this stage? So what if we try and build up the conversion rate on your website?
Yeah.
So it's actually really just kind of identifying what you could do next.
Yeah. Do you think people get overwhelmed though? Do you think they're like, because I think if I was a business owner, I would think there's always something to improve on. There's just one problem. There's going to be like, my website needs to be more user experience focused. That means I need to like redo my whole website. And you're like, no.
Yeah. Like, one step at a time. Yeah, that's definitely true. I mean, I personally feel that as well. And I mean, Adriana and I have spent, I guess, the last 3 months trying to figure out kind of what this brand is. And are we a brand or are we a framework or are we a person? Is it just me or are we a company? And I think that there's so many decisions all the time that every business owner has to make, and none of them are perfect.
Yeah.
No. Like, they're all going to have...
They can all change.
I was going to say, like, you can be one person and then you can grow to a
company.
See how it looks and who engages and how the success rate changes.
Perth is okay as an ode to that. Like... He's changed the way he's like conceptualized his business throughout the years so many times.
Yeah.
And if something doesn't work, he moves on to the next thing. Yeah. And there's been no break, which isn't crazy. But like, then he's finally formalized this thing that he can now, you know, personalize.
Proud to talk about.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, he might keep evolving it as it goes. Yeah. Exactly. I suppose that's, I mean, it's really special. I hope that, you know, everyone kind of does that, but
some might say it's a necessity in this day and age when you've got, you know, things like COVID just being going from like a 2 week lockdown to 2 years of like, what the hell?
Actually, agility, I think, is one of the number one skills that small business owners need nowadays.
And like, not just saying you're agile. Because I used to work at a place where that was the screensaver on.
Oh my goodness.
I'm actually getting a little bit triggered.
Be agile.
But then I had to sell in these plans that were not agile at all. And I had to then deal with the fallout of clients who were like, I've invested all this and like, it wasn't an agile like solution. Yeah. I don't know what to tell you. Like, it just didn't work. And you're like, well, you paid us by. That's very black and white and very simplified. Like, they weren't horrible people. That was a very common theme of like, we're agile and it's on our website.
Yeah.
But not therefore, using that. That's what we are. And then when you talk about your business and you're like, oh, this is what we do. You're like, oh, wait, interesting. These two don't match.
Yep.
So being able to be agile and as a business owner, like pivot and twist and do all those bloody cliche words.
Yep.
But that is so true. Like if you want to try, you know, if you're a gardener and you want to try Google Ads because you've heard of it, like do it for a bit, see what the results are. And if you're like, oh, yeah, true, that's wrong part of the funnel. I don't need to work on that. I'm going to like actually invest in this other part and see what clicks. And then naturally it should like, what's it called? It should, I want to say tumbleweed. That's another word. It should naturally flow on to like the next step of tumbleweed. That's my brain this morning just like
tumbleweed. No, I think it also builds confidence too.
Yeah.
I mean, every time you try something, you're learning, and every time it doesn't work, you're learning, and every time it does work, you're learning. I think it's a big thing, and it should be recognized that small businesses, all businesses, small businesses especially, carry a lot of risk. Making decisions like that, I guess, and that's the same with us, is making decisions about the trajectory of our business. It's not like it's hard because it carries so much weight. I mean, I said to you before, like I've got a young son and this is every small business owner is the same. It is your everything. It's your income. It's your family's income. Exactly. It's your home. It's your everything. And I think that that spending money on marketing in the promise that it'll help your business, I almost have to keep stressing, business owners can't just leave it to someone else. They have to take control of it.
Yeah, it's still got to be personal at the end of the day. Otherwise, people don't want it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's an interesting world I think we're in at the moment where we're in this weird space with DIY marketing and everyone's kind of doing it themselves and they think that's how they have control because they're doing it themselves. But it's not quite right. I mean, I think there's a balance between managing it and controlling it and actually doing the doing. And I'm trying to help people understand that they can make big high level decisions, but they don't need to be modifying the keywords on the Google ads. Like they can find help for that.
Mm-hmm.
It's as long as they kind of feel empowered to make those decisions and they know what the consequences are and, and they know what's kind of going to happen next. I think that's really important.
Well, you can't be a guru in every single aspect of your business. No. So, you know, you don't go in as a gardener. We keep using gardener, but you don't go in as a gardener being like, well, I already know how to do my accounts. It's like, well, not necessarily.
Yeah, exactly.
So why are you treating it the same way with marketing where you can do the basic formula working with people like you, but then how can you consistently keep that going if you've also got to garden an entire like house times four that day? Yeah. Like,
It's actually really, it's really crazy. We see it quite a lot. But I suppose you guys would get that as well, is when you talk to people, you can kind of see what they're passionate about. And you're like, my goodness, like just do that all the time. Just focus on that. And have you read, Michael Gerber, like his book, The E-Myth?
No, I haven't yet, no.
It's like, I think it was published in the 60s.
Oh, I haven't yet. I'll get around to it.
When did it just come out?
But pre-ordered.
Yeah, he's got this framework where he talks about someone transitioning from a technician through to a manager through to a visionary, and he uses a an anecdote. The whole book is a story of him working with this woman that owns a pie shop, and working with her to. Because she's a small business owner and she goes through the same problems that most business owners go through, whether they're a startup or they've been around for 10 years. Mm. It's that a small business owner is a lot of the time they're in that technician role still. And this lady was, she was still baking the cakes and she still had control over everything. She went away for a week, the business would fall apart. And it's so, so common. He talks about actually building in the systems and the frameworks so they can kind of get off that hamster wheel and get into that position where the business can run without you, but you're participating in it in a way that still adds value. So our gardener friend that we've just made up earlier, he or she, for example, used to actually be on the tools and doing the work, but now has built a team. And that's the point that, marketing is the same as any system. If you're going to do, this is how we do gardening. It's the same. You build systems in your business and it kind of runs without you. And that this book is like textbook how to grow a business, and I think the foundations are still exactly the same today. And
I think to read. That's super interesting because I have spoken to a couple of business owners who say like, I cannot give up control. I will not bring people into the business. But then I'm like, why don't you just then go work for a company in that role? Because if you're a business owner, like you're right. Like there's an evolution that's really, it makes sense to be able to give up control. Cause what if you're sick? What if you have a child? What if something unforeseen happens that, you know, imagine you're in Queensland and your house is, you know, flooded. Like how do you just say, you know, to all your clients, I'm going to have to take a hiatus. No one can do your work. And they're like, wait, but I contractually like, it's all like, it's a sticky, weird situation.
It's hard.
And that's an extreme example. But even small days where you're just like not feeling it, not vibing the 9 to 5 that day, you're just like, I'm going to take a week off.
I mean, right now, like we're going through our peak in Perth with COVID. And I mean, a lot of people can't come to work even just going through that process of understanding, even if it's not the small business owner, maybe it's their 2IC or maybe it's someone that works for them. Suddenly they're out for a week, maybe more. What have you got in place to be able to keep your business going?
Because,
you know, you need to be able to bring the income in to actually pay your staff and pay your bills and do all of that. And it's such a an interesting thing that I think people are still kind of working out. It's so, so hard.
Yeah, it sounds like you help people work to that consistency of operation and income. And that's really, really underrated.
I think so too. Yeah. And it's I hope people get there. I think the more we teach people about these ideas, the more the Australian small business economy is going to thrive.
Yeah.
The more we can provide free education, the more that we can keep adapting how we teach things. I mean, the number of influencers on social media that talk about how to run Instagram ads and how to run an online program, and I wish all they did was talk about things that are like that are boring and ugly but still so important because I mean we need to get that failure rate down like we just need to because of this great resignation that's happening at the moment every small business or potential small business owner that's got this entrepreneurial dream they need to be equipped with some of that really boring important stuff otherwise they won't make it past the 3 years. It's an interesting time I think we're in. I'm excited.
Yeah.
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 So much opportunity comes from it. But us a bit.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I love it. I feel like we wrapped in a really good spot, and I do have endless, endless questions, but I feel like I would love to have a read of your book. Do you want to do a shameless plug?
Yes. So my book is called Very Good Marketing for Small Business, and it's pretty special. I think it's if you read up to page 52, you'll get a really great idea of what the book is about. Mm-hmm. Hopefully in the next year, there'll be a second version of that coming out. Same framework, but talked about a bit differently. Our company is called Lumos Marketing, and there are six beautiful people that work there that can help you out with anything. And we're in Subiaco. So, come visit us anytime. We're definitely happy to have an almond milk cappuccino.
Bring coffee and we will talk
to you. Yep, absolutely. Yeah. So, but it's absolutely anything that you want to talk about, I'm definitely happy to help out.
Awesome. Good place to start. Yeah. Thank you guys. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you guys so much. It was nice to have a chat.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Perth Business Podcast. If there's anyone that you specifically want to hear from or you think would be great on the podcast, send us a DM on LinkedIn, Facebook, or Instagram. Or you can email us at theperthbusinesspodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you here next time.